Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing. Testing. Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Okay. Very good afternoon to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. We are still early, One more minute to go. So we wait for one more minute before we start. Anybody remember where were we last Sunday? Which page were we? Oh, double X. Oh yeah, we finish off double X. So now we are at Romanized 21. XXI. Okay. So this is Tipitaka Master Shenhua's introduction. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no problem. Yeah, you all can go back early. No, you want to stop at 5 also can, no problem. It's okay, yeah. If you all need to go, you can go. So some have requested for 5:30. We see how it goes. If you need to go, you can go, no problem. If you have any prior arrangement, because it's an important day, you need to meet up with your family members, you better go. So we also would like to take this opportunity to wish every father a very good Father's Day. Then your children, they will remember you for all the sacrifice, for all the love and whatever wholesomeness that you have given them. So if you do your duty well, you will have a good Father's Day. If you don't do your duty well, then Father's Day may not have much meaning. Okay. Maybe we can start now. Okay. We will begin the puja. So as usual, compose your mind, develop the faith, sadha and virya, then pay respect mindfully, then we will start. We will chant the Mahayana tradition. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Quan Sing Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Okay. Now we will chant the Theravada tradition. We will start off with the salutation to the Triple Gem. Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suwakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Pānatipātā vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Adina dana vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Kāmesu micchācārā vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Mussāvādā vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Sūrāmeraya majjhāpamādatthāna vairamane sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the great beings that are worthy of respect. Okay. Maya, come. No, you're off the fan, I think. It's the fan. Yeah, it's the fan. Yeah. Never mind, it's okay. It's okay, don't worry. As long as there is no distortion. Okay, come in. Yeah, just join us. No? We are just about to start. We just finish our pre-puja. Yeah? So, for those who are new, do you have this book? Yeah? The Six Patriarch Platform Sutta? Or you don't have the book? Oh, okay. Never mind. Maybe for today. Yeah? You listen to what is being shared first. Then later, if you want to get a copy, you can ask Sister Lee to help us. Anybody who goes to Tsui Ying Tong or Shen Hua's place, you should be able to get a copy. Okay, we turn to page Romanize 21, XXI. Tipitaka Master Shen Hua's introduction. All of the suttas are guide to use in cultivating the way. So this one is a very important understanding. You know why is it a guide or not? It is like a pointer, point towards the Dhamma, the truth. But the sutta itself is not the truth. Understand not? Like you want to realize Nibbana, it is not the word Nibbana. Understand not? It's not the idea, the concept of enlightenment. It is the actual realization. So whatever that describe Nibbana are just words. And all the Dhamma that points towards enlightenment, they are just the finger pointing at the moon. Understand not? When the finger points to the moon, it tells you that is the moon. And you have to realize that. But the Dhamma that points towards the moon or the enlightenment is just like the finger. So to see the moon, to realize the moon, you must graze beyond that finger. Understand? So that you have to realize it. So the three phases of Dhamma is the same. The Buddha said, phase one, pariyatti. You develop the understanding of the Dhamma through learning. Means hearing, reading. Then you reflect and you contemplate. So this is learning. So when you learn, you develop knowledge or partial understanding of what the teaching is all about. But you cannot leave it. It's still knowledge. You know you cannot do, but your delusion condition you to do. It's just like precepts. You have learned about it through right view. You know precept is very important for cultivation. That's why when we chant in Pali, when they administer precept to you, towards the end, they will remind you about the importance about keeping these precepts. They will chant Ibmani, if it's five precepts, Pancha Sikha Padani. If it's eight precepts, it's Ibmani Atta Sikha Padani. So these are the five precepts or the eight precepts. Then they will emphasize on the precept. They say, Silena Sukantinyanti. And the meaning is very important, very deep. They say, this sila, if you cultivate it, it will become your virtue. So virtue is the source of Sukantinyanti, from the word Sukang, happiness. Source of happiness. Then the next important advantage of keeping precepts or keeping virtue is silena sukantinyanti. Then silena soka sambadan, I think, something like that. I forgot the Pali word. Boga sambadan. Then the third one is silena nibudyanti. Nibudin is peacefulness. The second one is silena sugasampadat. That one, the meaning is precept or virtue is the source of spiritual wealth. If you don't keep precepts, you will not have the condition to have a peaceful mind, a happy mind, and a mind that has this ability to receive Dhamma, means source of spiritual wealth. So this will remind you of the importance of precepts. Because without precept as a base, it's very difficult to develop meditation or samadhi. So the Buddha lists them in order of sila, samadhi, Panya. Sila is precept. Without precept, you cannot prepare your mind to meditate because the hindrance are very powerful. So when the hindrance is at bay, means you have spiritual faculty. And without spiritual faculty, you cannot keep your precepts. You must have faith in the Buddha. leading to the understanding of the importance of his teaching, then there is a spiritual zeal that drives you to cultivate the Buddha Dhamma, to understand this teaching, because it will bring about enlightenment in the here and the now, no more suffering. So with this understanding, the virya will be very strong. Then you are determined to go this way, to cultivate the Buddha Dhamma. That's why you will start to train your mind to have sati or mindfulness, which is the third spiritual faculty. Because without sati, mindfulness, you cannot see your mental intention. You cannot keep your precept. You cannot identify the evil roots. You cannot see your spiritual faculty, whether they are there or not. And you can't even know whether the hindrance are active or not, because you are heedless. You don't have mindfulness or heedfulness. So training the mind to be mindful is the most important. If you are not mindful, you are heedless. And the Buddha said the heedless are as if dead, spiritually dead. No chance at all to develop the spiritual understanding and to live the spiritual life of wisdom, peacefulness, and joy or happiness. So that's why sila is very important. Then once sila is in place, you got less problem, you got less fear, worry, anxiety, and suffering and misery. Then your mind have more peace. Then you are more happy. That's why precept is a source of happiness, source of peacefulness, source of spiritual wealth. So all this, they will fall into place. Then the mind that is peaceful, has clarity, can see things clearly. Then when you develop the ability to have sila, the samadhi factor, which is sati and samadhi, what they call pa factor of sati and samadhi, or mindfulness and collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind, they will enable you to see things clearly, see things as they are. A mind that has sati, that is stabilized, will have samadhi. When sati and samadhi is there, there is no thought, there is clarity. That's why you can have attentiveness. You can see things as they are without the words, without the conditioning, without the interpretation, the stirring and the reaction. That's why the Buddha called this the direct seeing, seeing things as they are, jnana dasana, direct knowledge and vision of the truth or the reality. Now we may have to make do with what is it. I try to check. No, never mind. Ingvi, it's okay. Because sometimes if you put up the area, unless you want to speak through the microphone, it can have distortion. So far, so good. Okay. Certain things, there are causes and conditions behind. If it's meant to be, it will be. But we need to develop understanding, accord and flow. Just let it be. Okay. So with that, we will continue. So now you understand all of the sutta are guide for you to use in cultivating the way. So sutta is not the real thing. It consists of teachings that points towards the enlightenment, the realization of the Buddha Dharma, the realization of truth, the awakening. But the real awakening is more important than the sutta, where the sutta is just a guide that guides you there. The other Zen analogy is they use the turtle. There is Often, if you go to Zen monastery or sometimes in the Buddhist text, the Mahayana text, you see the turtle with a bundle of Tipitaka behind, wrapped around it. Living beings that are still not enlightened, they laugh at the turtle. They say the turtle has been keeping the Tipitaka, carrying the Tipitaka for so long, and yet he hasn't penetrated the truth. He is still holding on to the sutta or the Tipitaka. But then the turtle, which is wise, they will laugh back at the living being. You know why the turtle will laugh at you if you still not awakened yet? Huh? Why did the turtle laugh at you? Huh? Why? Anybody want to try? Huh? Why did the turtle laugh at you? Senhu already said and give you the hint. Why did the turtle laugh at you? Huh? Why? What did Senhu say? All sutta are only guide for you to make use of, to develop the cultivation. It is not the enlightenment. So that's why the turtle laughed back. The only living being that are deluded things that the Tipitaka is the truth, is the enlightenment. This is just sutta pointing towards the truth. That's why he laughed at you back. Understand? Because if you cling on to this and carry this, what the turtle is trying to tell you is you cultivate Buddha Dhamma to develop understanding. You don't go and carry the knowledge with you, understand? Understand? You don't go and attach and cling on to that Dhamma knowledge. It's just like the analogy that the Buddha gave. In the olden days, to cross the river or the stream, you either need a boat or a raft to take you across. Understand? So the Dhamma is like the raft that helps you to cross the stream to the other shore, which is Nibbana. But after you cross the other shore, you have developed the realization, why must you carry the raft with you over there? Understand? Where you say, this is the Dhamma that make me awaken, that's why I must carry it. Then you become like Shen Xiu. You know who is Shen Xiu? The, what they call, the senior disciple of the fifth patriarch, Hong Ren. So, the Da Si Xiong, because he cannot understand, he hold on to the Dhamma. To him, cultivation is like that. The mind is like a mirror bright on a stand, is it? Polish until it shines so that no dust can alight. So to him, the Dhamma of wholesomeness, purity, virtue is the right Dhamma. So he hold on to this practice. That's why he cannot realize the true mind, because he cling on to the duality of wholesomeness, pure mind, true mind, right practice. So this is still one-sided duality. That's why the mind cannot cease. Then he's busy polishing the mind so that no dust can align. He's busy rejecting the defilement, the asava, the unwholesomeness. And such a mind cannot free. It's busy doing a lot of things. Such a mind is still grasping, clinging, and holding to the good. So because of that, if you have the wisdom, you will know all these sutta, they are like pointer towards the truth. They are not the truth. They are like the raft that help you to cross the stream to realize the enlightenment. And you cannot cling, you cannot hold, you cannot grow. That's why enlightenment got nothing to do with memory. Memory is just accumulation of the past, of the known. That's why thought arises. Your thought is respond to all this memory, all these experiences. Then from all this, if you use the past or the known to act, then you are not acting at all. You act from memory. You act from your attachment, your clinging, your craving, your delusion. But these are all accumulation of experiences that you develop over time. That's why the Four Noble Truths of the Mahayana tradition, they actually changed the Second Noble Truth. Second Noble Truth, we always talk about samudaya, isn't it? What is samudaya? The cause of arising of suffering, isn't it? But they change it to accumulation. They are not wrong, actually. The First Noble Truth, the Buddha just proclaimed the First Noble Truth of suffering. The Buddha said, in this world, there are 8 realities of life and existence that each and every living being who live long enough, you will have to confront. When you confront them without wisdom, suffering will be the result. And that is the First Noble Truth. Then the Buddha moved on to explain the Second Noble Truth. He said there is a Second Noble Truth that explains to you clearly the cause of arising of suffering. How does all this suffering come about? It is mainly due to your craving, born of delusion. But the Mahayana never used this word, samudaya, or cause of arising or suffering. They said suffering arises because of accumulation. The Second Noble Truth, the cause of arising or suffering is accumulation. If you accumulate all these experiences as memory, these are the ones that will create delusion in you and haunt you and condition you to grasp and cling and hold. Because when you accumulate, what happened? All of your life experiences, what are they? What are they? Good and bad experiences. More often than not, you accumulate more of which one? Your scars of memory, things that you are not happy because you hold on to them, because there is a lot of fear, there is a lot of sorrow and lamentation when you confront them, like child abuse and all those things, phobia, then how people torture you, torment you, take advantage of you, cause so much sorrow and lamentation to you, deceive you, mistreat you, and do all those things to you. Whereas your happy moment, unless you have good karma, there are not much for you to recall. Understand? You can only recall once and maybe once a while, how your parent reward you when you do well in your exam, or when you behave very well. Then during the early years, if you come from a poor family, then you will recall all of the harsh moments. Then suddenly when condition improve and become better, you can recall all those joy and all those things coming in. But whatever it is, these are memory experiences. And when you accumulate them, what happened? You create duality, isn't it? Correct or not? Whatever experiences that you don't like, what happened? You have fear, you have phobia, you have this negative interpretation of them. That's why you create this unhappiness towards them, fear towards them, or what they call the evil roots of anger, hatred, emotional negativity and fear. So delusion and negative tendency is one side of the duality. Then the other side is what you hold on to, the good memory of the good time and all those things. So this is why when you accumulate all this and you come out with a views and opinion of what is good for you and what is bad for you, what is favorable, what is unfavorable, what is pleasant and what is unpleasant. So your mind develop a view, duality. Then when you come out to live life and you act according to this memory, what happened? This memory will remind you of all the fear, worry, anxiety, insecurity. Then how people cheat you and how you got cheated by others, how you got deceived and how sometimes you also deceive others. So all these are accumulated memory. So whenever you see something or hear something when you live life, you will recall this memory. Then you will act according to what this memory tell you. Oh, this guy last time cheated me before. Or you recall memory. Oh, this guy is up to no good. Then like snatch thief, you hear motor sound, there is fear already. Maybe it's a snatch thief. So you act out of fear, out of worry, out of anxiety, out of sorrow and lamentation, out of stupidity, ignorance. Then sometimes when you have this, what they call, certain type of sense experience that arise, then you compare to your memory. Oh, last time when I was there, it was more beautiful, it was better. Then the food there, not as nice as that one. So what happened? Your like and dislike. Because you measure, you judge, you comment, you react. And all this is attachment, craving, clinging, cause of suffering. That's why accumulation indirectly is attachment, clinging, grasping, born of the evil root. If you don't have delusion, you will not accumulate. You are not attached, you are not cling. Memory is for you to use, understand? Not to register all of your psychological fear, all of your psychological and emotional negativity. These are the ones that recall, make you recall through memory, like the scars of memory. Remind you of the unhappy moments, the sorrowful moment, the insecurity, the fear, the danger, everything. So if you act with that type of mind, you are not acting at all, because you are acting from the past that has memory of this, and because of that, you act according to your fear, your insecurity, your sorrow and lamentation, your phobia and all those things. So this is not acting at all. What you should act is based on your understanding, your wisdom. When you see something, do not allow memory to interfere. You just check with your nature, the understanding. If there is understanding, you will act appropriately. You will not act out of fear or insecurity. Then you act out of love, out of understanding. You maintain your virtue, your Noble Eightfold Path, then you will act according to Noble Eightfold Path to resolve things amicably. No more fear, no more delusion, no more sakayadity, self-delusion, and no more jealousy, no more envy, no more selfishness. You act based on understanding. Means the reality is like that. Things are just the way it is. People are just the way they are. Then you learn to accept them for what they are. Then you at peace. And then you act with wholesomeness. How can I resolve this amicably? How can I be a blessing to others so that they can improve their life? So that you can avoid unnecessary argument, conflict, misunderstanding. So that you can resolve all situations amicably. So that you can reduce all of the unnecessary tension and conflict that are about to erupt or happen. So these are what the Dhamma is capable of when you understand. So this will bring us back to this particular topic, regarding suttas. So we come back to the first paragraph of page Romanized 21. Shana said, all of sutta are guide to use in cultivating the way. So now you have a better understanding. They may be spoken by the Buddha, the Bodhisattvas, or the Patriarchs, and also by the Arahats, or Arahan. In Theravada tradition, you call them Arahan. Mahayana call them Arhat. Transformation beings and God. Although they all serve the same purpose, the doctrine within them differ. The sutta spoke by the Buddha were translated from the Indian language into Chinese language. Actually, it's from the ancient time in India where Sanskrit were used, into Mandarin, and thus worked their way into Chinese society. In China, then, all the sutta are translations, with the sole exception of the present work, the Six Patriarch Sutta. You know why, which was spoken by the great Chinese master, the Six Patriarch. But this sutta doesn't come from the Buddha, understand not? It was never there in the Tipitaka, understand not? That's why I say this is the only teaching by Huineng that actually enjoy the same status as the sutta, which are the discourse of the Buddha. And because of that, it don't need interpretation, but it come direct from China, the Six Patriarchs. The great master was originally an illiterate peasant. See? He got no education. So don't be foolish, understand? Don't look down upon yourself, because a lot of Buddhists or practitioners, I realize, they tell themselves, how can I cultivate? I didn't even have a formal education. I didn't even go to university. No, Dhamma doesn't need any qualification. Dhamma only needs sincerity of heart, the faith, and the perseverance. It don't need any education. Education, if you develop it with understanding, then education helps. But if you don't have understanding, education actually becomes a stumbling block, because too much knowledge will actually prevent you from opening up your mind to receive the teaching. Because you think you already very wise, very smart, very clever. Then when the Buddha said all living beings before they are enlightened, they are deluded and ignorant. Wow, you cannot take it. I'm a university student, no. I got first class honors, no. You say I ignorant, I deluded. That's why you will not even look at the teaching or give it a chance. If you are so egoic and so intellect in your approach, then it's very difficult for you to have an open mind to listen. Because in the early day, I remember, when I read the sutta, not really a sutta, when I just hear this Dhamma talk from Chief Reverend and sometimes Venerable Suwano, he said, according to the Buddha, all living beings, before they are enlightened, they are deluded. They got ignorant. They don't have what they call wisdom or understanding. Then you feel funny, cannot be, we are the top in the state. Then later go to uni, we also top the uni, the faculty and all those things. Why the Buddha say we still ignorant and deluded? So sometimes you go to temple, you can't even bow down to lower your self-esteem, to have humility, to pay respect to the great beings like Sakyamuni or Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. So a lot of gradually I realized they had this problem. But for me, it was never a problem. I reflected on it. Then I tell myself, there must be a reason. Otherwise, cannot be, because the Buddha himself, he is such a great being. And the moment I read his Four Noble Truths, I knew he was the real one. Nobody can summarize all his understanding into just Four Noble Truths so beautifully and so wonderfully. All of life, mundane and super mundane, is all inside just Four Noble Truths. I said, nobody can do that unless he is the real one. Because at that time, even I myself, I said, if my nature realized this truth, I cannot summarize it this way, no way. Unless I have heard about it before and received the teaching. So that was why I actually developed the open mind. Then I start to study the teaching. Then I start to go all out, develop the faith, the sincerity. Then I just persevere. Then as I move into it, develop the mindfulness and the heedfulness, then only I come to realize the profound meaning of what the Buddha meant, that all living beings, before they are enlightened, they are deluded and full of ignorance. Delusion points towards sakkayaditti, self-delusion. An entity, a being, within this so-called five aggregate of form and mind that you call the me and the I, this so-called human being, where you deludedly grasp and cling, thinking that you are real. And when you think you are real, what happens? There is an entity created. There is an egoic mind of who you are. That's why from there you live and you act. That's why you will have selfishness. For me or not for me. Then when people threaten you or develop any unhappiness in you, you will have emotional negativity. That's why the three evil roots are selfishness, possessiveness, anger, hatred. Then finally, delusion. They will arise when you deludedly grasp and cling with self-delusion, thinking that this is you. Delusion is fear, worry, anxiety, because you don't understand. So, as a living being, when this manifests, you have this problem. Then I realized, because that time, after I developed the mindfulness and the heedfulness, I realized everything I do, as a person, as a human being, I got my own selfishness. For me or not for me. Nothing to do with me, I don't want to do. No advantage to me, my family, my parents, my brother, sister, or my own race, or my school, or my own company, I don't want to do. That is an automatic selfishness, understand? Then when you don't like certain things, your mind reacts. Your mind got anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, dislike. Then you feel unhappy, miserable. Then certain thing when it arises, through delusion, you got fear, fear of death, fear of things not happening the way you want it to be, fear of the unknown, fear of the consequence of your action, yeah? Whatever speech that you arise. So all these fear are delusion. So because of that, I come to realize that the Buddha was very, very wise. Every living being, they have this selfish intention, emotional negativity and fear within them. And because of that, I start to cultivate understanding of what the teaching is meant to be. Then I start to study what the Buddha meant by the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. How from sakkayaditti all these things come about. Without that self-delusion, sakkayaditti, there is no greed, no hatred, and no delusion. And I expanded on the meaning of these three evil roots on my own. Nobody taught me. the book also never write, only use certain words, but never explain and elaborate. Then later on, as I reflect and contemplate, then I check through my own mindfulness, that's why I can see all those very fine and subtle mind state. Then they come back to the back door. Then this understanding starts to stabilize. Then it, like one day, set upon this nature that no wonder the Buddha said all living beings are deluded. They got a lot of ignorance. And because of that, they created a lot of negative karma. Their nature developed the what they call delusion, because they cannot see things as they are. They cannot develop this understanding through connecting their mundane mind to the true nature. Because they cannot silence, they cannot develop the ability to be aware, and they cannot connect. Because they cannot connect, they cannot see things as they are, they cannot awaken, they cannot understand the teaching. And because they don't understand, they are caught in delusion, heedlessness. That's why they continue to develop the negativity of karma. They continue to fall life after life. They got no chance of salvation. So all this, the understanding will arise. And you will know how to cultivate. You will know how to move. That's why without mindfulness, without heedfulness, you don't reflect and contemplate deep into the teaching. You cannot understand. So this particular sutta, the Diamond Sutta, the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, is a very good sutta. What I am trying to explain to you is, the real Dhamma don't need education. Even an illiterate person like Hui Ning can understand. So don't look down upon yourself. Don't blame yourself for lack of education, no need. You only need to have an open mind, simple mind, a mind that has faith, very sincere in understanding life. Then you just persevere to develop understanding. Then the way will be there, the Dhamma will be there. Then you will be able to go beyond. Just like Hui Ning, of course he has his past, cultivation. So we read on. The Six Patriarch Sutta, which was spoken by the great Chinese master, the Six Patriarch. The great master was originally an illiterate peasant. Peasant means supposed to be a farmer, but he's a woodcutter. When he heard the sentence of the Diamond Sutta or the Vajra Sutta, which said, one should produce that thought which is nowhere supported. So the English translation is not so good here. The actual translation should be, the mind that has got no dwelling. Their support, sometimes the meaning is not clear. It is the mind that has got no dwelling. Then he experienced an awakening. And he went to Hongmei to draw near to the fifth patriarch. The great master Hongren, the fifth patriarch, transmitted to him the wonderful Dhamma using the mind-to-mind seal. Which has been handed down in unbroken patriarchal succession. The sixth patriarch inherited this mind seal Dhammadong and proceed to carry out the wonderful wisdom life of the Buddha. In his speaking of the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, So this was how the sutta came about. Now it has been translated into English, and the Maisil Dhammadhara of the Buddha has been transmitted in perpetuity to the West. It is hoped that Westerners will now read, recite, and study it, and all becomes Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and all patriarchs. This is the main objective of this translation. May all who see and hear it quickly accomplish the Buddha way. See, this is a pure wish Xuanhua has made for you all. Wherever this sutta is transmitted, the orthodox Dhamma may be found right in that place, causing living beings quickly to accomplish Buddhahood. Such is the importance of this new translation. The sutra is indeed a treasure trove. It is the true body of the Buddha, the compassionate father and mother of all living beings. It can give rise to limitless Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and patriarchs. May all in the West who now read this sutta realize Bodhi and accomplish the Buddha's way. The sutras contain the precious wisdom of the Buddha. There are some, let us call them garbage-eating scholars, who claim that the Surangama Sutta was not spoken by the Buddha. This is most certainly not the case, and I have made the following vow. If the Surangama Sutta is false, I will fall into the uninterrupted hell forever. So he took up the challenge so seriously. So you will have to understand that the Surangama Sutta is actually very genuine. But very few people can understand the Surangama Sutta. So this was written by, I think, his disciple. How you pronounce this word? Chiang Pai. Chiang Pai San. Oh, this is a temple where he was at. Is it a temple? Chiang Pai San. The Sing is one. Is it a temple? Anyway, it's in San Francisco. Maybe at the back. They got put all the monastery there. On the later page, you see. Avatam Sangha Hermitage, Monastery, Calgary. Where is San Francisco? Dharma Ran Sishli Amitabha. Oh, don't have, Gold Mountain. Blessing, prosperity. Don't have. Never mind. Anyway, it must be related to him, because it is his introduction. Okay, then we'll move on to the next one. The next one is translator's introduction. This is the Buddhist Text Translation Society co-chairman, Primary Translation Committee, International Institute for the Translation of Buddhist Text, San Francisco, August 1977, Heng Yin, Bikuni. Translator's Introduction. This is the third edition of the first commentary to the six patriarch Dhamma jewel platform sutta. Dhamma jewel, they call it Fa Power in Mandarin. That's why it's called Liu Chu Fa Pao Tan Chi. Able to be, sorry, this is the third edition of the first commentary to the Six Patriarch Dhamma Jewel Platform Sutta, able to express the essence of the Six Patriarch's heart. Since the time of Great Master, since the time the Great Master spoke this sutta, no other commentary has revealed his basic principle. The Dhamma of his heart, Tipitaka Master Chen Hua's commentary, unfold the heart of Dhamma, the mind seal before the reader. If you wish to understand the wonderful meaning of this sutta, you should study this commentary, for within it are set forth the limitless, inexhaustible, profound principle of the Buddha Dhamma. Among Westerner and Eastern people, it is the flower of wisdom, the real fruit of Bohe. Furthermore, this translation has been prepared by the Buddhist Text Translation Society of Sino-American Buddhist Association. Each of its members, bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasika, upasaka, many of whom hold master's and doctor's degree, have read the manuscript with care over a period of several years to ensure its accuracy. Essentially, the mind seal cannot be spoken or expressed in writing, but in his commentary, the master has done just that, using numerous analogies and expedient devices to cause people to understand what they had never understood before. Tipitaka Master Hua was born in the northern China, and after his mother's death, he practiced filial piety by sitting beside her grave for a period of 3 years. He built a small grass hut to keep out the wind and rain and sat there in meditation. If food was brought to him, he ate. If no food was brought, he did not. The master later traveled south to Canton, where he was appointed by the Venerable Master Xu Yun to serve as the head of the Vinaya Academy of Nanhua Monastery, the temple of the Six Patriarchs. He later received in transmission the Dhamma of Master Xu Yun and became his Dhamma successor. Since arriving in America, the master has turned the great Dhamma wheel, lecturing on such sutta as the Surangama Sutra, the Lotus Sutra, the Adstore Bodhisattva Sutra, the Vajra Sutra, and the Heart Sutra, and others. He teaches an ever-growing numbers of American disciples, many of whom have left home to become bhikkhus and bhikkhuni. In San Francisco, the master has founded Gold Mountain Monastery, where he is lecturing on the Avatamsaka Sutra. He has also founded the International Institute for the Translation of Buddhist Texts. He has made the solemn vow that wherever he goes, the orthodox Dhamma will prevail, and the Dhamma ending age shall not set in. Most recently, the master established a city of 10,000 Buddhas near Tamarch, California, a vast complex of 237 acres and 60 buildings, to serve as a center of world Buddhism. The city of 10,000 Buddhas, or what they call One Fortuna, now hosts the Dhammarine Buddhist University, of which the master is president, and soon to be established are many programs to benefit living beings in many ways. The master upholds firmly the orthodox Dhamma, for the Dhamma he teaches proceed from direct and authoritative transmission, and he works unceasingly for the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha. This lively commentary constitute the first authentic transmission to the West of the mind seal of all Buddhas, which has passed in unbroken perpetual succession from Sakyamuni Buddha to the present day. We present this volume as the foundation for the flourishing of the Buddha Dharma in the West. So, Bhikkhuni Hengyin. So, this was the foreword put by the translation committee. Then they got the reviewer's preface. It is good to go through all this so that you understand the purpose of this sutta, why they translate it and how it was prepared in such a way. So the reviewer also have a role. So we will read. When the fifth patriarch transmitted the Dhamma to the sixth patriarch, he said to him, "Do not speak too soon, for the Buddha Dharma arises from difficulty." See, this is the message from the fifth patriarch. Centuries later in northern India, Tipitaka Master Xuanhua, then known as the filial Sanpai, was practicing filial piety. He cultivated and meditated for 3 years beside his mother's grave. His only protection from the northern wind and rain was the 5 feet square hut made from stalks of sohan bound together in an A-frame which left both ends exposed to the elements. One time while cultivating, there was a miracle happening. Filial Sanpai saw the great master, the sixth patriarch, come to his heart. He entered through one of the openings and talked to the filial Sanpai, just like an ordinary person. Filial Sanpai thought that he was real, forgetting at that time that the great master has entered Parinibbana over 1,000 years ago. The sixth patriarch said to Filial Sanpai, "In the future, you can go to America. You will meet this person and that person." 5 schools were divided into 10 to teach and transmit living beings. 10 will become 100, and 100 will become 1,000, and so forth to endless numbers. In abundance, endless abundance, numbers incalculable, as grain of sand in the river Ganges. This marked the true beginning of the proper Dhamma in the West. So this was the encounter. That's why when cultivator or great beings relate their encounter with great beings, sometimes you have to have an open mind because you may not understand how these things are possible. You may think, oh, sixth patriarch already dead. How can he come back? Just like what Xuanhua mentioned, when in the dream he couldn't recall that sixth patriarch was already dead 1,000 years ago. But what is your understanding? How come all these things can happen and people can mention about it or talk about it? What is your understanding? Is it really true? Sixth patriarch came? Or what happened? What is your understanding? Use the mic. Never mind, just give it a try.
It is his nature that is connected.
Yeah, sadhu. Very good. Thank you. The sister Pamasri. Yeah. It is their nature that manifests. Like when I say Kuan Yin came, it's not Kuan Yin, the nature manifests. Because their vow, their affinity, when the condition arises, it will manifest. Even like what I share with some of you, 208, Amitabha, Maitreya Buddha came with a request. Then 1986, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva came with a message. So all this is not the real person. It is from their nature, because they have their nature, and their nature is ever radiating for the cultivator of the way. So their nature will know. Then when the time comes, when certain cultivator arise and manifest, then when their form and mind is established, they will know. And their nature will come, because they are the one, especially like Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, they support, protect and bless their nature. That form and mind that come connected to that nature. Then when the time comes, they will come and send the form and mind a message. Then you will know what to do. And then you also know that all these are meant to be, because there are affinity, there are conditions behind all those happenings. So that's why all these are possible. That's why I say have an open mind. Don't use your limited mundane mind and simply comment. Then come out with all the funny idea that you may have. So now you understand, huh? So never look down upon anything or make fun of anything. Because it is you who got everything to lose. The question is very simple. What happens if they are the real one? Then you not only miss, you get into deep trouble. Because your speech is not in accordance. Why must you doubt? When you have an open mind, you don't need to doubt. But when you doubt, there is delusion. What is doubt? Five hindrance. You don't have faith. You cannot understand yet, you doubt. Then you create. Through what? Through delusion. Because you got ego. You want to show off and think that you have logic. How can, cannot be. Six patriarchs long ago dead. This one is illusion. You go and say that. You better make sure you understand. If you don't understand, the best policy is keep quiet. That's why golden silent. Okay. Very good. Thanks for that good answer. We continue. After they had talked, when the great master moved to leave, the Phila son rose to escort him. They walked together a few steps, and suddenly the sixth patriarch was gone. It was then that the Phila son Pai realized, oh, the sixth patriarch entered Nibbana hundreds of years ago, but nevertheless I met him today. See? Several decades after this miracle, following years of difficulties and hardship, in a cold and tiny temple in San Francisco, Chinatown, Tipitaka Master Hua began transmitting the Dhamma of the Maidor of all patriots, my seal of all patriots. He continued to do so every day. Those who recognize him, listen to it, consider it, and cultivate it. In this commentary on the Six Patriarchs Sutra, the Master says, you will succeed only if you do not fear suffering. The Buddha Dharma arises from difficulty. The more difficult, the better. So now you must endure suffering. See, the word he uses is the same like Sabba Asavak Sutta. Certain asavak or defilement, you need to endure, you must endure. Some you need to exercise restraint, you have to exercise restraint. Okay, we continue. The Buddha Dharma arises from difficulty. The more difficult, the better. So now you must endure suffering. This is difficult, But you can do it, for it is the opening of your wisdom. So this is the reviewer's preface. So this is the Buddhist Text Translation Society co-chairman also, Heng Chi, I think. Primary Translation Committee, International Institute of Translation Buddhist Text. So this is the review committee. And then turn to the next page. See, the first page here is Sakyamuni Buddha, Namo Bansi Sakyamuni Pho. Sakyamuni Pho. Wen Pho. Sakyamuni Wen Pho. Why Wen? The Wen is what? What is the meaning of Wen? Oh, must be something to do with Ben Si. Because the one that he asked the disciple to chant is Namo Ben Si Sakya Muni Pho. So the Mandarin word is what? Sakyamuni Wen Pho. Never mind. Then after that, the next page is Bodhidharma, the 28th patriarch, 28 Tamo Jusi. This is the Bodhidharma, Tamo, original teacher. Means the first patriarch of China. Then after that, 29 is the second patriarch of China. Then 30 is the third. Then 31 is the fourth. Then 32 is the fifth. Then 33 is Hui Ning. Sixth patriarch. So that day somebody asked, how come from Sakyamuni straight away go to 28? I had explained in the last talk. It's 28 because he is the last patriarch from India. After Sakyamuni passed away, he was passed down to Mahakasapa. Then Mahakasapa passed it down to another 26. Finally, it reached Bodhidharma. And Bodhidharma carried the patriarchship over to China. Just like now, Xuanhua carried over to the West, America. So after him, he is the first patriarch of the West in America. Then the next one he appoint will be the second patriarch in America. So hopefully, when he reached the sixth patriarch, there's another great being in the West that come out with more profound teaching like Hui Ning. If this one come out, he speak English. Just like Hui Ning speak Mandarin. So that one is American essence. Okay, next page, we shall read this opening statement. This one is very important. So from now onward, before we start, we shall read the verse for opening a sutta. We recite together. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. So this one you have to bear in mind, that this type of teaching or Dhamma is very rare and not easy to come by. So just like the opening verse Xuanhua mentioned, the unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma, means this type of teaching it's difficult to encounter, not only in one aeon, so hundreds of millions of aeons, and one aeon is one world cycle. Then if you have the condition, I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to phantom the Tathagata's true meaning. So this is a very important determination. Okay, forward. The Six Patriarchs Dhamma Jewel Platform Sutta has been explained in America before, but I do not know how well it has been done. Some lecturers simply read the text aloud, and since each sutta has its own special interpretation, merely reading it aloud does not reveal the meaning. So this is very important. The Buddha Dharma flourished in China, but only the teachings of the Six Patriarchs, the illiterate patriarch, were made into a sutra. It was recorded by the master's disciple, Fahai. Although his translation may not mirror the patriarch's exact word, the meaning expressed are correct. I hope that everyone will study the Buddha Dhamma with his true mind. See? Study with your true mind. Don't study your thinking mind, mundane mind, conditionalizing mind. That one cannot understand. See? Those who understand, I hope that everyone will study Buddha Dhamma with his true mind. Why woman left out? Woman left out. He's no more her. They should change the word to dia. He used the word everyone. With dia through my, you can change it to dia. So it includes woman. English, very precise, gender specific. When you say he's, lady is not involved. And not hold the opinion that it is very easy. It is not. By regarding the Buddha Dhamma as extremely important. It is only by regarding the Buddha Dhamma as extremely important that you will be able to comprehend the principle which I explained. This is a foreword by Xuan Huang. The note down there, Dhamma Master Fahai was a room entering disciple of the Six Patriarchs. This means that the Six Patriarchs has transmitted the wonderful mind seal, Dhamma to him. And he was therefore privileged to enter the Patriarch's room. So Fahai was actually the hand-picked successor of the Six Patriarchs. So he will become also the seventh patriarch, because he transmitted to him. Then after that, it must be along the line that it reached Xu Yun. Then Xu Yun transmitted to Xuan Hua. So we move on. There is this introduction. So now I think we are going to the sutra proper. Page 3. This introduction is quite long. Never mind. Because he need to introduce how all this come about. Okay. The Six Patriarchs Dhamma Jewel Platform Sutta is the specific title of this sutta. And the word sutra is a general term for all discourses given by the Buddha. In order to clarify their content, sutra titles are classified into 7 types, according to their reference to people or person, dhamma, and analogy as follows. three singer. Three of the seven types of title refer to only one of the category of person, Dhamma and or analogy, and so they are called the three singers. For example, the Buddha spoke the Amitabha Sutta. It's a title established solely by reference to person. Both the Buddha and Amitabha are person, for only a person can cultivate and realize Buddhahood. The Buddha is a person, and the person are just Buddhas. In Chinese, when we write the word Fo, the symbol for person, Ren, stands on the left-hand side. That's why the Fo, you have a Ren, Si Pang. The Mahaparinibbana Sutta is a title established by reference to the Dhamma, Nirvana. Nirvana is a Sanskrit word, which in Chinese is composed of two characters, Nipan, which means be explained as non-produced and non-destroyed. Pusan Pumye. Then the Brahmanet Sutta is the title established by reference to analogy. In this sutta, the Buddha explained the precepts. If you keep this precept, you will give forth like the great net in the heaven of the Brahma King. But if you carelessly break precepts, you commit the grave offense of knowing and yet deliberating violating Dhamma. Your light then flows into the three evil paths of hell beings, animal and hungry ghosts, where there is not the slightest trace of merciful treatment. Then the three doubles. Title established by reference to person and Dhamma, person and analogy, and Dhamma and analogy are called the three doubles. For example, the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta is the title established by reference to Dhamma and analogy, since the wonderful Dhamma is analogous to the lotus flower. The Lion Roar of the Thassakammawan Sutta is the title established by reference to person and analogy. Thassakammawan is the first of the 10 honorific titles given to every Buddha, and therefore represent a person. The lion roar is an analogy to his speaking the Dhamma. Then the Sutta of the Question of Manjushri is a title established by reference to people, to a person, the Bodhisattva Manjushri of great wisdom, and the Dhamma he requested, Prajna. Then complete in one. The seventh classification contains reference to person, Dhamma, and energy. The Great Universal Buddha Flower Adornment Sutta, Avatamsaka Sutra, refer to the Buddha as a person, great and universal as a Dhamma, and flower adornment as an analogy. Then the sixth patriarch Dhamma Jewel Platform Sutta is a Chinese, not an Indian sutra, and its title is not classified according to the seven topic mentioned above. The sutra is classified according to person, Dhamma, and a place. The sixth patriarch is a person, the Dhamma jewel is a Dhamma, and the platform is a place. I will now explain the specific title of this sutra. The sixth patriarch, Master Hui Ning of Nanhua Temple, who spoke the sutra at the beginning of the 8th century AD, was the sixth patriarch, sixth Chinese patriarch. He lived six generations after Bodhidharma, who brought the Mahayana teaching to China from India, and who became the first Chinese patriarch. Bodhidharma was also the 28th Indian patriarch. And so from the time of Sakyamuni Buddha, the great Master Hui Ning is counted as the 33rd patriarch. Dhamma is a method. It is like a rule, a model, or a pattern. if one cultivate according to this method that is practicing Dhamma, then you will, the Dhamma is like a specific, a precious jewel. Platform, the platform is the place where the sutra was spoken. This Dhamma seed may be raised above the ground by 3, 5, or 9 feet, but never more than 10 feet in front of it sits a small table which holds sutta. Dhamma masters speak Dhamma, administer the 3 precepts, and transmit precepts from the Dhamma seed, which Dhamma protectors, good spirits, and numerous diamond treasury bodhisattvas take turn protecting. So there are some notes down there. Note 2 is, one formally become a Buddhist only when one has received the 3 refuges. That's why Kui San Pao, taking of the 3 refuges, is very important. If you don't take the refuge seriously, you cannot be a true Buddhist, a true cultivator of the Dhamma. Because the triple gem, they are the gem in the entire universe. Only within the triple gem you can find the teaching. Three refuges transmitted in a traditional ceremony by a qualified member of the Sangha. They are refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. The translation of the Sangha may not be that accurate. Here is referring to the Aryan Sangha. To qualify as a triple gem, it must be the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, not any disciple that take refuge in the Buddhist tradition. So here we may actually take note that the definition of all Buddhist monks and nuns of the past, present, and future may not be that accurate. It's all of the Aryan disciples of the Buddhas, could be lay people. The Sangha is actually the enlightened disciple of the world, where these are referred to as Aryan Sangha. Aryan means the enlightened disciples of the Buddhas. Then Bodhisattva is a Sanskrit word. Bodhi means enlightenment, and Sattva means being. They do not enter Nibbana, but choose instead to remain in the world and save living beings. Thus, Bodhisattvas are enlightened beings who enlighten other beings. Diamond treasury refer to a division of Dhamma protectors or Dhamma protecting Bodhisattvas. So this Dhamma protector, sometimes they are also Bodhisattvas, like Wei Tao. He is cultivating the Bodhisattva way. So you don't think that they are normal devas. No, they are actually Bodhisattvas. Okay, we turn to the next page. Sutra. The 6th Patriarch Diamond Jewel Platform is the specific name of the sutra. And the word sutra is its general name. Sutra is a Sanskrit word which means a tally. Above it tallies with the true principle of all Buddhas, and below with the opportunity for teaching living beings. Above it tallies with true suchness, the miraculous principle of all Buddhas, and below it tallies with the living beings who need the teaching. Thus a sutra tallies with both the principle and the opportunities. The word sutra has 4 additional meanings. All this we will skip through quickly because they are not that important. Stringing together, the principle of the Buddha Dhamma are linked together by the sutra just like beads are string together on a string, then attracting, creating the opportunity for teaching living being. A sutra attracts living being, just like a magnet attracts iron filings. All living beings who wish to study the Buddha Dhamma will be drawn to the principles of, principle in the sutra, like iron filings to a magnet. Then permanent, from antiquity to the present. A sutra does not change. Not one word can be deleted, not one meaning can be added, not increasing or decreasing. A sutra is permanent, unchanging. Method. A sutra is a method respected by living beings in the three periods of time. In the past, living beings rely on this method to cultivate and attain Buddhahood. In the present, living being depends upon it to move from the position of foolish common people to that of Buddhahood. In future, living being will also cultivate according to this method. A sutra is a method then venerated throughout the three period of time. This is their interpretation, not important. The word sutra has many more meaning. For example, a sutra is like a bubbling spring. Principles flow from it, like water, bubbling up out of earth. It is also like a carpenter's chalk line, which make a perfect clear straight line. But if you understand the first four meaning, you understand the basic meaning. To explain a sutta correctly, one must first outline it according to the five profound meanings of the, how you pronounce it, Tiantai school. First, you have to explain the name according to the seven kind of sutra title explained previously. This sutra is established by reference to people or person, dhamma and energy and place. Then discriminating the principle, the sutra takes the real mark as its substance. The real mark is without a mark, and yet there is nothing which is not marked by it. Then clarifying the principle. The principle of this sutta is the realization of Buddhahood. If you cultivate according to this sutta, you can realize the Buddha's position. Discussing the function. This sutta function is to lead you to understand the mind and see your true nature. If you understand the mind, you have no worry. If you see your own nature, you have no cares. No longer do you worry about one problem only. To begin, no longer do you quit worrying about one problem only, to begin worrying about another. And when that one is solved, find yet another one coming to take its place. If you understand the mind and you understand your nature, then everything is easy. This one is very true, very profound. You understand your mind, means your mundane mind, your five aggregate or forming mind, and see your own nature, your true mind, then everything is very easy. Determining the teaching mark. The sutra is like sweet dew, the heavenly elixir of immortality. Drink it once and you will never die. The sutra is like ghee, a clarified butter with the most miraculous and subtle of taste. Ghee is also used to describe the sutra spoken by Sakyamuni Buddha during the Dhamma flower and lotus nirvana period of his teaching. So under the notes, note 5, the Tiantai school, systematized by great master Qi Yi, is one of the great teaching school of Chinese Buddhism. It takes as its basic text the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutra and divides the Buddha teaching into 5 periods. Each period is presented by an analogy of a milk product. Avatamsaka Sutta, whole milk. Agama is coagulated milk. Vaipuya, cow, cattle milk. Then Prajna Paramita, butter. Then lotus flower, Nirvana, clarified butter or ghee. The original Dhamma or Avatamsaka Sutra is like fresh milk. With each new teaching, it becomes richer and purer, yet it is still the same basic substance, Dhamma food. So these are explanation, not so important. Okay. I think the next chapter is trying to introduce to you the 5 previous Chinese Patria before Hui Ning. This one, I think we keep it for our next class. You can go back and read if you want, page 9. Okay, before I forget, I need to let you all know, next 2 weeks, we cannot have class because next week my daughter come back. The following week, I'm traveling. So, next 2 Sundays, there will be no class. Okay, take note of that. Then there is this sister singing from Klang. He said today the family relative or member came, I think. So she cannot make it. But she sent me a text. Wish me happy Father's Day. Then she said she will come for the next class. But let her know that there is no class. I had replied to her, but I hope she read it clearly. So, any question so far regarding the 6 Patria Platform Sutta? If you got any question, you can ask. Just today, somebody requested for us to stop early. Now it's 4:35. If we stop at 5 or 5:30, we got maybe less than 1 hour left. So, you got any question, you can ask. Those who have to go at 5, you can go. I will continue until 5:30. Anybody got any question or anything that you want to make clear or clarify? Whatever you don't understand, you can ask. Suddenly the recording becomes so clear, so good. No more distortion. You don't have question, I take a break, I take a drink first. You can ask me anything, don't worry.
Question is probably a bit dumb.
No problem. Any question is most welcome. You can ask. No problem.
It's a very basic question.
Yeah.
So basically, if you say that you have to have an open mind,
yes,
to get the teachings,
yeah.
Then my question is,
yeah,
there might be an issue if you go to if you look at everything with an open mind, because in certain things, certain path leads you into a bad path. How then can you say that if you eliminate, if you do not use what you learned previously, there are so many paths in the world, and there are a lot of bad paths, probably more than good ones.
Very good question. So, what is your understanding? So you cannot, to you, if I don't read you wrong, you cannot have open mind. Is it that final conclusion?
No, my conclusion is okay. You need, how can you put in a filter in place?
Because if that is your meaning, then it's different. Eh? Okay, then I will answer you. Eh? It's a very good question. That's why I like people who inquire, then discuss. It's meant to be a discussion. Dhamma discussion is like that. I respect you for what you are. Likewise, I hope you respect me for what I am. We are here to share understanding. No right, no wrong. Because right and wrong will lead to unnecessary conflict, argument, division of opinion and all those things. What is important is the Dhamma sharing must be something done to benefit everybody. Understand that? In what sense? Sharing with mutual understanding and respect is very important. If I respect you for what you are, you respect me for what we are, then what we share becomes beneficial. We are not talking about right and wrong. Understand that? We are not trying to argue over a teaching or a Dhamma. Then we are not trying to be protective of what we believe in. My teaching, my teacher, my method, my technique. All this, no more. So what we are here is sincerely sharing something that we understand. Then we open up for discussion. No right, no wrong means what? People with that understanding, they will think that is right according to them. Understand not? So right according to them is still right. Understand? That's why it's no right, no wrong. Because that right is a relative right according to them. Likewise, if I say something, I will never say it's right. I will say this is the Dhamma that I understand. This is the truth that I had realized. It's up to you to whether use it, accept it, and make full use of whatever that can help you to move. Then you will benefit. Whatever you cannot understand, unless you are very, very sure that this is not the correct one, then better have an open mind. Understand? Like I said, what happens if this is the true one? This is the teaching that you have not understood because it's beyond you. If you don't have an open mind, then you are creating unnecessarily obstruction of karmic negativity via reacting and rejecting is okay, but reacting is very dangerous. Then when you start to say things and hit out, it's even more dangerous. So out of love and compassion for a living being, I call this a Dhamma sharing. Sharing means what? No right, no wrong, like I explained. Whatever that you can benefit or take to use, use it. Whatever you cannot understand, just let it be. Have an open mind. Then there is no more argument. No more right and wrong. Then the discussion can be very open, very frank, and everybody is very, very like free to comment, to even suggest, or even share whatever they understand. So with that as a basis, I will answer you. Your question is about filtering, which is very good. Filtering is something that you can only do when you have a view and an opinion. Understand? You don't have a view and an opinion, you don't filter. You have an open mind because you are open to truth. What you have to do is, according to the Buddha, you listen first. Listen attentively. Don't filter before you investigate. Understand? If you don't listen, you cannot investigate whether this is the truth or not, whether this person has wisdom and understanding beyond what you have. Understand? But if you can discern that through your understanding, then you become beautiful. you don't just filter with your views and opinion. And that is very dangerous. Filter with your views and opinion means what? You only want to listen to things that fit into your belief system, that fit into what you think is the truth or the correct teaching. Such a person has this danger, like the Buddha said, if you hold on tenaciously to your views and opinion of what is right and what is wrong, then you have a view and an opinion of things. Then like the Zen analogy, yeah? Your cup is full. Understand not? When your cup is full, whatever tea that is poured in will overflow out because you don't give it a chance for it to go in, for you to investigate. Can follow, eh? If you have an open mind, means what? You listen without prejudice, without having a view or opinion of whether it's right or wrong. I will just investigate, I listen. Okay. Then the Buddha's advice is very easy. If I follow the advice, does it harm me? Does it harm others? He told the Kalamas. If it doesn't harm, I got nothing to lose. Well, this is something beyond me. I still don't understand. But that is the criteria I use. If you want to say that is a filter, it is a very good filter. But if you filter with a view and an opinion, that is not a filter. You filter with understanding, means what? As long as it doesn't harm me and harm others, I got nothing to lose. At the most, I wasted some time trying it out and investigating. Because when you agree to try it out, to put it into practice, you have not believed. Like the Buddha said, don't believe anything he say, because his teaching is the truth. The Dhamma is the truth. And it stands up to investigation. That's why his Dhamma is ahipasiko. He invite the monk to come and investigate. Because this is the truth. It will stand up to investigation. And this will relate to life. And you can put it to test. If you investigate this way, then you will benefit a lot. You will not get into trouble. But if it does not stand up to test, then you can drop it. Understand now? Because it is something for you to find out and investigate. But you listen and you try to filter, that is not listening. The art of listening is what? You listen with an open mind, you don't filter. You listen, then you investigate. But if you listen with a filter, with a view and an opinion, you are not listening. You are commenting, judging, reacting, understand? The moment you listen, cannot be. Where God like that? Cannot everything also open mind one? If you open mind, yeah, then how are we going to filter things? How are we? So when you start to have this, what is happening is, you are not attentively listening. A lot of important message that is together with the teaching and the sharing, you didn't really listen. Because you have a lot of your own views and opinion that is opposing what is being said. Because there is this subtle right and wrong behind. That's why the art of listening is to listen with an open mind. No prejudice. Doesn't mean you accept, no. Understand not? When I listen with an open mind, I doesn't believe or accept. I listen, then I investigate. I put it to test. If what they advise, if I put it to test, cause me harm and harm others, I will not even investigate. Because it got no benefit. Understand not? It caused suffering. Lead to delusion. That is how the Buddha teach the Kalamas. Where the Kalamas is a group of people who actually didn't know what truth is. Then there are so many teachers who came and teach all different. So one day the head of the Kalama gathered all his people And they heard so much about Sakyamuni Buddha at that time. He was so famous. So they decided to approach him. And the leader asked this question, which was very good. And Sakyamuni Buddha answered in a very beautiful way. That's why it became the famous Kalama Suttas. The Buddhists always refer to this sutta. He told the Kalamas, he said, you listen. You don't have to believe anything just because it is spoken by a great being. Eh? Widely accepted, widely acknowledged, famous, or just because it's written in a very famous holy book. Understand that? Yeah. Or whatever status that person may carry, is it? The key thing is have an open mind, not to believe, but to investigate into everything that is being spoken. Then he told the Kalamas, even what I said to you, you don't believe. If you believe, then it's blind faith because you don't put it to test, you don't investigate, you don't find out whether it stands up to investigation or not. And this can bring about downfall, bring about unnecessary suffering and problem in the future. Yeah, you believe there is blind faith. Then like the blind leading the blind, you will end up somewhere else. So he said, the criteria is very simple, is it? When I listen with open mind, then I can reflect and check. Yeah, I have listened. I have given this particular sharing a chance. I have listened thoroughly. Means I understand what this person is trying to tell me to do, but I do not reject when I listen because I have clarity, I just listen. Then when I listen, I understood what is being spoken, then I put to test. First criteria, very simple. If I cultivate according to what he say, does it harm me? Does it harm others? If it doesn't, I got nothing to lose. I can investigate into it. When you investigate into it, then the test is very simple. Like the Buddha Dhamma. Dhammapada verse 1 and 2. You familiar with these two verses? Oh, you are not familiar with the Buddhist teaching, huh? Not familiar. Never mind. These two Dhammapada verses are very simple, but they are very important. Maybe I will explain to you what are Dhammapada verses. Do you understand what are Dhammapada verse? Don't understand, okay. The Buddha spoke a lot of truth during his time, but they managed to collect a total of 423 verses that they put into a book. They call it the Dhammapada. Dhammapada are word of wisdom spoken by the Buddha. And these are very unique and powerful wisdom because these are evergreen. You know what is evergreen? It is always applicable irrespective of civilization. What period of civilization? What era? Evergreen means it is a universal truth that will be applicable forever. No matter during what period of time, whether it's very ancient or very modern or medieval age. If you were to look at history, even for a living being to come out with one verse that will last for a certain period of time to be the truth, it is very difficult. Take for example science. Science. We studied science. So during the early days, Newton's theory, Newton's law, you heard of Newton's law. He was so popular, the apple that dropped and he discovered gravity. Then Newton's law, the three law, law of motion, action and reaction, they were so accurate. Then law of gravity, He can even calculate the movement of the planets, everything. So Newtonian mechanics become very popular, very, very popular. That's why they initially call it hypothesis. Then what they call after that? After they pass the test, from hypothesis it become what? Theory. Theory means accepted, you're tested. Then come our famous Einstein. What happened when Einstein come? He revolutionized the Newtonian mechanics. The whole of Newtonian mechanics collapsed, failed, cannot stand. Because Newton came out with a fourth dimension. He said time is relative. You can understand that. That's why he got the theory of relativity. Time is dependent on speed. When your speed tends towards the speed of light, there is no time, timeless. There is a formula for it. Then he said, the relative velocity between two entities, when you travel near to the speed of light, is not according to Newton mechanics. Is it? When the speed increases, let's say, when the speed is slow, 1,000 miles per hour, traveling this direction, then opposite direction, another 1,000 miles per hour. Relative velocity, according to Newton mechanics, is 1,000 plus 1,000, because these two will meet at the speed of 2,000 miles per hour. Grand up. Einstein said, no. There are some number at the back that is dependent on the theory of relativity. And because of those numbers, is it, when you reach near the speed of light, this entity, let's say, traveled at near the speed of light, that one also near the speed of light. When they two go in different direction, your relative velocity should be twice the speed of light, isn't it? Or almost twice the speed of light, isn't it? Einstein's theory says no. The fastest moving entity within the phenomenal world is just the speed of light. It can never exceed the speed of light, but the speed of light is the fastest within matter. Then that theory collapses. Then later on, they come out with a lot of this, what they call microscopic type of, they call it, all the various type of photon theory or whatever. So what I'm trying to point out to you is to come up with one truth that can be evergreen is not easy, because everything is subject to condition and everything. So not only scientific, these are spiritual truth. And the power of spiritual truth is because it's based on wisdom that is so profound. So he can come up with 423 until now, since the Buddha passed away, and now 2,000 over years, they are still applicable, evergreen. And you can investigate, because these are truth related to the spiritual teaching. So this first two verse is very simple. You can put to test one, the Buddha said. He said, our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arise, everything arise. Can follow, eh? If you don't take care of mind, he said, if you allow your mind to be heedless, means you don't give any attention to it, you just allow it to do what it like, then this mind will become heedless, is it? Heedless means you are not serious about life, you are not training it, you are not giving it any importance, you just do what you like, understand? You want to kill, you kill, you want to do what you do, but you are heedless. You are not interested in consequences, you are not interested in the truth that governs life and existence. So if you were to act, speak, and think with this type of heedless mind that is not trained, then the Buddha said, the evil root born of delusion, which is greed, hatred, and delusion, they will arise. Such a being, suffering will follow them. just like the wheel that follow the hood. This is the first Dhammapada say. So the Buddha say, your life, you decide how you want to live. You don't have to believe him. You put it to test. A greedy person, a selfish person, a violent person, an emotional person with a lot of anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, selfishness, deceitfulness, and people who has a lot of what they call lust, craving and desire to own things, possess things, take advantage of things. Such a person, when they live life with all these evil roots there, are they happy? Do they inflict suffering on people? That's why it says suffering will follow them. And because there is this law of karma, you reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. Finally, it will hit back and they will become afflicted, miserable. So you don't believe, you go and cheat, you go and lie, you go and commit sexual misconduct, rape, or misappropriating. See what happened to your life. The suffering follow you. Whereas the opposite complementary verse, verse 2, the Buddha said, similarly, when you understand the mind is so important, is it? Your mind, which is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So if you are heedful, is it? We choose take care of mind, train this mind, so that it's ever mindful not to arise the evil roots of greed, which is selfishness, craving, desire, and lust. Hatred, which is envy, jealousy, violence, emotional negativity, and all those related evil roots. And fear, worry, anxiety, delusion. Then such a being, the Buddha said, happiness will follow them like the shadow that never leaves them. Because after you train your mind to be heedful, to be mindful of your mental intention, all this evil root cannot arise. Then you will act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind, with a pure mind that is free of this evil root. Evil roots are root of all evil. They make you very evil. When you are selfish, you can kill, you can harm, you can do all sorts of things because of your selfishness. That's why it's an evil root. When you are angry, you can be violent, you can kill, you can harm, you can do a lot of funny things. That's why they are the root of evil. Out of fear, you also will do all those things. But out of love, you will never do such things. That's why if you were to be heedful and cultivate virtue, love, understanding, respect, gratitude, contentment, all this, it will lead to happiness. That's why that person who is heedful, who train his mind and develop the keen attention to check the mental intention behind all his actions, speech and thought, such a being, the Buddha said, happiness will follow him just like the shadow that never leaves him. It's just like we started just now. Precept or virtue is the source of happiness, is the source of spiritual wealth, is the source of peacefulness. If I don't kill, harm, and misappropriate or commit sexual misconduct, everything, if I don't lie or deceive people, if I don't take intoxicants that make my consciousness low and lead to downfall, I will have a lot of peace, isn't it? I will have a lot of happiness and joy. But if I do all this and violate all this, I become evil. I will have a lot of enemy. A lot of people will come after me. The law will come after me. Then there is fear, worry, anxiety. Fear, worry, anxiety lead to restlessness of mind, lead to misery, lead to all the negativity. That's why you have to understand the importance of training one's mind to maintain the precept so that you don't make mistakes in life. So this Dhammapada verse is just the first two twin verse. You can investigate. But if you don't have an open mind, you have another type of teaching, then you say you filter. Before you understand, before you investigate, my advice is check whether if you follow, it harms you and harm others or not. Like the precept that the Buddha talked about, if you have greed, hatred and delusion, you can check whether you harm anybody or not, you become evil or not. The moment you check, you realize, if I become selfish, I will become evil, I will harm people, I will deceive people, I will do all those things, then it not only harm me karmically, it will harm others. This is something you cannot do. And this is a very good check. Answer now. Then the moment you check and it stand out the investigation, then you ask yourself, my life, how should I live my life? I don't want to end up following Dhammapada verse 1 and become miserable. I don't want to have suffering. And then you determine to cultivate, to train your mind, to be mindful, to be aware, to be attentive, so that you are incapable of negativity. And that is why the Buddha's advice to the Kalamas, he said, you investigate into everything. And the best check is whether it harm you or harm others or not. If you do this, you are well protected. Yeah. But don't filter before you listen. Understand? When you listen and try to filter with your views and opinion, you are not listening. You are actually judging, reacting, commenting. And that is what living beings are doing actually throughout the day, most of the time. That's why they fail to listen. The art of listening is very important. With an open mind means what? I don't prejudge the sharing, the situation. I listen. Then I give it a what they call a test. I put it to test. I investigate. If I do, does it harm me or harm others? If that criteria, that investigative criteria, is passed, then I tell myself, no harm. Well, it doesn't harm others, it doesn't harm me. No karmic effect. Then I give it a try. Then I put it to test. I really put it to test. And if it stands up to investigation, I adopt it. I use it for the good of the many. Because I can learn from it. I can benefit from it. This is the meaning of open mind. This is the purpose of having a open mind discussion. Means we do not want to prejudge any sharing. Understand? Then if whatever I don't quite understand yet, I will still agree to accept whatever they share. We are based on his understanding, this is what he believed or she believed to be right or the truth. Then we respect them for what they are. But if I have an understanding that I can explain in a different way, then I explain to you. Then I'm not trying to say this is right or wrong. I just explain to you clearly that this can be explained in another way. And then you go back, you investigate again. Then you make a decision because it is your life. Nothing to do with my nature or me. My duty is to share. After that, whether you understand, don't understand, agree, don't agree, accept, not important. The important message is, whatever that is shared, listen with an open mind. Take whatever that can benefit you and use it for the good of the many and yourself. That is very, very important. To me, it's not about right or wrong. It's about how you develop wisdom, understanding to improve your life so that you can be a better human being, to develop understanding about life. Okay? You can add, no problem. You can even share your whatever understanding.
So what you said, there's two things about that two questions. One is, personally for me, the way we grow up in the world, and considering I'm in the science stream, we are cultivated from very young through education to have an opportunity opinion. So in order to have an open mind is something that is not a natural instinct.
Okay,
how do you...
Okay.
And when you go to work, you cannot be too open. You need to make a decision immediately. So what your meaning is, how do you flip? How do you learn how to become totally open?
I think I understand what you mean. When it comes to career, when it comes to work environment and situation, well, I am indeed very surprised when you say, as a science student, you are trained to have opinion. I never learned that. I'm also a science student. I never learned that in my science subject.
What I mean is opinion in terms of, for example, when you do a research, right? You need to propose a hypothesis. So
correct.
That's what I mean. So it means
hypothesis is something that I'm not sure.
Yes.
It's not an opinion.
Okay. So
I want to do a research. Means like a thesis. Okay? Thesis is like my lecturer gave to me. Okay, you do this thesis because this field is not clearly understood. A lot of new field. That's why you do a thesis. Then the thesis will be based on what they think is the truth. Understand? That is a hypothesis. That is not an opinion expressed.
It builds, but in science field, it builds upon your previous truth. So that's how science evolves. A previous truth, say for example, a lot of things are previous to root truth. So what I find is the problem I face with, so I was brought up as a Buddhist, but the issue that I had is, when you look at it, it is difficult to look with a thoroughly open mind. It's nigh impossible because you already brought up with a preconceived notion. And the second question I had is in terms of when you say that the initial filtering, it is... What is do no harm unto yourself and unto others, which is fine in theory, but...
Oh, that is not a filtering. That is not a filtering.
Okay.
I said when you... just give me 1 minute. When you listen with an open mind. Don't exercise any prejudgment or filtering. But when you listen with a view and an opinion, you are not listening with an open mind. You are listening with your prejudice inside. Understand? That's why you say you express an opinion already. With that opinion, you approach the meeting, you approach your company discussion, then it become what? Your opinion against others' opinion. So that is the first point I want to maybe explain, to make clear. Because that filtering, when I say you check, means investigate into it, whether it harm yourself or harm others, it's not a filtering. Filtering means the moment you filter, you already express that opinion. But this is checking. Checking means I don't know. That's why I check, whether it harm me or it doesn't harm me. If it harm me, stop straight away, no need to investigate. It harm others, also no need to investigate. So this is not what I meant by you listen and you filter. No. You listen, you don't filter. You listen until you understand. Then you give it a check. That check is not a filtering. That check is just you check. Does it harm others and harm yourself? Straight away, if it harm others and harm yourself, then this is something against nature's law. Something that will bring about downfall, suffering. Definitely you will never go ahead. Understand? But it doesn't stand up to investigation. Then maybe you continue and finish your second question first. Then I will try my best to make it clearer for you based on my understanding. The first question, before I forget, can I answer first? You talk about the science understanding of expressing opinion. You say without opinion, as a science student, you cannot move. Okay, let's say during the olden days, when we do not understand science that well, a few of these famous scientists, Galileo, Copernicus, they were put in jail. Why? because they say the earth is not the center of the universe. The earth is only one of the planet that goes around the sun. Then when they say the earth is round, nobody believe, because everybody say, how can it be round? Then when they say the earth rotate on its axis and go around in space, it is something even more difficult for society to accept at that time. Like you say, science evolved through all this. Science is not belief, whereas religion a lot is belief. Understand not? That's why the church condemned them and put them into jail. But as science is based on hypothesis leading to theory, because they want to see proof. So when the scientists can prove, then it's accepted. That is what an open mind means. I don't reject. I investigate. Then I come out with hypothesis and theory. Then I confirm it with experiment. Then I accept it. Then they realize the moment it is the truth, they progress very fast. If it's not the truth, science stagnate. That's why after all this, they realize science is actually just like the Buddhist teaching. They really investigate into everything. And if it stand up to the truth, then only they accept. And that is what an open mind means. If you are closed like the early years churches, because they don't believe in all this, they say this is against God's written law. Men are born special, born in the image of God. Man is the center of the universe. Therefore, earth must be the center of the universe by deduction. So this is how they believe. And when they believe, it is not the truth. The truth, when it surfaced, humanity, they will evolve and grow. Then as they evolve and grow, all these belief systems, one by one, they will start to collapse. That's why the rise of science and technology leads to better and better understanding of the truth. And they are still evolving, because to the scientists, earlier on, they thought they have understood a lot. I like this sentence. Last time they say, the more you understand, the more you know, the more you don't know. You believe or not? Scientists now realize, the more they think they know, they unfold more mystery. Now, there's a latest revelation. Every Milky Way, or every of this, what they call major galaxies, there is one very, very big black hole that is like the center that drives the whole galaxy and Milky Way. And this black hole is so huge in proportion that scientists can never understand how it arise and how come it is like that. But they can detect from what they observe through Hubble telescope, because they emit a type of light that is so bright, the brightest in the universe, and there are so many billions of them in the universe. That's why the more they probe, the more mystery they unfold. So it's very difficult to put one statement of truth that can be applicable forever, evergreen. So this is something actually nobody can do. But when you look at the Dhammapada verse, you are very, very surprised. 423, he not only come out with one, he come out with 423 that is evergreen until today. That's why the enlightenment of the Buddha is very unique. Not to say we try to praise the founder of the religion. Actually, he said the teaching, the Dhamma, was there before him. Before he proclaimed the truth was there in the midst of nature. He only discovered them, realized them, like the scientists. Then the scientists now also come to know they have all the parameter of most of the important scientific entity that they need to understand. There is only one part they fail to break through. That's why the unified theory cannot come about. They discover electricity. They discover gravity. They even discover a lot of those very important entity that scientists benefited from. But there is only one thing. Even the thought, they have gone into it quite deep. But consciousness is one thing they cannot penetrate. That's why the unified theory cannot come about, because they fail to go into this understanding of the consciousness. And consciousness is the only entity that can break beyond the speed of light. That's why, like I explained to you all earlier on, the furthest entity that scientists can probe is about 15 to maybe 17 billion light years away. Travel at the speed of light, you need 17 billion years to reach the entity that you can observe with the Hubble telescope now. And that is a very long time. You know? So like I say, you want to make one phone call, let's say at the speed of light, you dial 17 billion years only reach there. You know? Then for him to say hello and come back for you to listen, another 17 billion years at the speed of light. So we cannot function even at the speed of light. All this got no more meaning. By the time the message reached there, the whole universe is different again. So there is an entity that can be within the moment. That's why they talk about wormhole. They talk about consciousness, super consciousness, that can be there in an instant. So without consciousness, without the understanding of the spiritual field, the universe mystery is very difficult to unfold, very difficult to penetrate. That's why in the Mahayana Sutta, they got this famous sutta that can actually lead back to the origin of time. They call it the singularity. The scientists also acknowledge that there is such thing as a singularity. That's why within a dust mode, the entire universe is there. It is from that singularity that the Big Bang and the expansion come about. Then everything that comes from this singularity, the singularity will have the all-knowing understanding. That's why now the scientists agree to this point of singularity, the origin. That's why in the study of the teaching, there is the true nature, original nature. It's not the beginning of all things. It's the original nature as it is before creation, before mind arise, before consciousness arise, before all these element, continent, planet, star system arise. And all these are in the teaching. That's why you want to ask yourself, how did the Buddha 2600 years ago answer them when they point out the star? He told the people the number of stars that is in the universe, they are more than the sand that you can count on the Ganges. How come he can know at that time? Because he has realized the singularity, the oneness nature. He has merged with that nature. That's why he has that universal wisdom and understanding to probe. So coming back to understanding, what I want you to have a free mind or open mind is be open to listen to truth, because truth is not something that can be easily understood. Even at this moment, I'm still very open to receive new truth. Because this civilization, at the time when I'm born, based on our consciousness and evolution, we may understand until this point. But beyond this, a lot more new things will surface and arise. because it is unending. Truth is unending. The whole of the cosmic universal creation is beyond thought, beyond mind. Cannot be understood by the rational thinking mind. It has to be from that nature. Yeah. That's why if you don't develop the meditation and merge with that nature, a lot of these things you cannot understand. Even whatever I share with you at the moment, I never study from the book. The book gave me limited knowledge. Even the TV or media or internet, they give you limited knowledge of what living being understand at this point of time. So if you have that understanding, then you continue to have open mind, then you can receive a lot of new things, a lot of new truth, a lot of the unknown, because we never close our mind. We never say science has to be like that. We don't express our opinion and limit ourselves to just this. So this is my sharing for you all today. So I respect your view, which is very good, because you are willing to speak out based on what you understand. And by speaking out, it creates good condition for the sharing to be more lively, which actually I like. So thank you for all this. So now that I have explained, you can also express what you want to express. It's not a problem. This is just a Dhamma sharing session. The only difference is the people who are here, they are more interested in that sutta that we are sharing, Six Patriarch Platform Sutta. So if your field is different, maybe we can develop that sharing in a different environment. Because this is a sutta class. This is not a normal type of sharing class. But today, I don't mind because a lot of them want to go back early. So normally, first session is 4:30 sutta class, then meditation. Meditation, you can ask any question. During that time, the normal type of sharing will be there. So what's the time now? Those who are supposed to go, 5 o'clock, you want, you can go. 5:30 already. Another 4 minutes. Sorry. So those who have to go, you can excuse yourself, no problem. Then those who want to stay back, you want me to end what time? 5:30? Okay, 5:30, got people knock their head. So we got 4 more minutes. What you want to do? Share merit, transfer merit? Okay, if you want me to share merit, transfer merit, then I will do that. So recall to mind all of your wholesomeness, the merits that you have cultivated and developed over the 2 hours, or less than 2 hours. Oh, more than 2 hours, 3, 4, 5, 2.5 hours of sharing. May we recall to mind all of this wholesomeness and goodness and merits, then we will determine to share these merits with all beings. We will start off with the devas. Akka sata cha bhumata devanaka mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakhantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice and may it greatly, may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to departed one. Idang me nya kinang ho tu sukita hon tu nya tayo. Idang me nya tinang ho tu sukita hon tu nya tayo. Idang me nya tinang ho tu sukita hon tu nya tayo. Let these merits accrue to our departed relatives and all those who can receive them, and may they all too be well and happy always. Okay, we invoke blessing for the nation. Devo vasatukalena sasa sampati heto cha vito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers, be righteous. Okay, now you make your aspiration. Imina punyang kamina mami bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya. By the grace of this merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and other worthy ones.